And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday, November 20th. Currently 33 degrees here under mostly cloudy skies, 38 degrees under overcast skies in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Keynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for your Thursday for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at a few extra clouds as we go throughout today. And yes, we will have a chance of scattered rain showers here for us in the Heber Valley. We'll have a chance of scattered rain and maybe a couple of snow showers in Park City, and especially a little above 7,500 feet today. High temperatures will climb into the mid-40s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the upper 40s for the Heber Valley. Now, as we go into tonight, we'll still have that moisture rotating through the area, so there will still be a chance of some scattered rain showers in the Heber Valley and the chance of a few scattered rain and snow showers as we get it towards the Park City area. Temperatures, as we go throughout the overnight hours, dropping down to around freezing. We'll see those highs rebounding back into the low 40s in Park City for your Friday afternoon. We'll see those highs in the upper 40s for the Heber Valley. Now, we start to clear things out by Friday afternoon and Friday night. So as we go into the weekend, look for lots of sunshine. It's going to be a very seasonal and pleasant weekend overall. Temperatures will start off on the chilly side. We're down into the mid-20s Saturday morning in the Heber Valley. We're in the upper 20s for start off the day in Park City on Saturday morning. High temperatures Saturday in the mid to upper 40s for Park City. We'll have those high temperatures in the low 50s for us in the Heber Valley. That sunshine and clear sky sticks around as we go into your Sunday. Again, we're back down into the low 20s Sunday morning for the Heber Valley. Morning low temperatures in the upper 20s in the Park City area. High temperatures in the mid-40s for Park City in the afternoon with highs in the low 50s for the Heber Valley. All right, we've got a busy holiday week heading our way. So as we kick things off on your Monday, lots of sunshine, highs in the upper 40s in Park City, low 50s for highs in the Heber Valley. We'll have a weak front that moves through on Tuesday. It could bring us a few extra clouds and a spotty isolated shower. Temperatures, though, start to cool down. Highs only in the upper 30s in Park City for your Tuesday and Wednesday with highs only in the mid-40s for the Heber Valley. That's a good July forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Keynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, we'll be checking in with Summit County Council member Megan McKenna. Park City School District Superintendent of Schools Lindsay Huntsman is joined by Park City Board of Education Vice President Nick Hill. And finally, Park City Summit County Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder with details on some upcoming events, including this month's gallery stroll. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include author Simon Winchester, who discusses The Breath of the Gods, his sweeping new book on the power, mystery, and history of wind. Then what happens when technology is designed around people, not the other way around? That's the idea behind locally based Monterey Technologies, which creates systems that align with how humans think, work, and make decisions. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, of course, heard every Thursday at 9 a.m. Good morning in the studio with an update from yesterday's Summit County Council meeting. I have Council Member Megan McKenna. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Your district, what, 5?
I believe I'm district 2.
I should start learning these, okay. So I can let people know they are representing district whatever. Yeah, okay.
South Summit District is the district that I represent.
Okay. Let's see. The council reviewed conservation easements for the Year property, Year Ranch property near Camas. It seems like council members raised some concerns with certain lines and provisions, but again, ended up approving everything unanimously?
Yes, we did.
So does staff and Summit Land Conservancy need to make any edits, or... We're good here.
No, I think we're good to move forward. I think there was a good discussion and some points brought up to consider. And really, this is and what Jess Kirby, our lands manager, brought up. This is county owned property, so these are things that are easily within, you know, our jurisdiction once the sale goes through. It's really some points that if we were to sell the property in the future that we would want to make sure were conditions of that sale.
Okay, and so what are the details on the sale? Again, we had heard that, once the government reopens, we should get these closed. Is that going to happen?
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, things were certainly delayed, but we're hopeful that we can keep moving forward.
Okay, so big picture, what is allowed and what's not on your ranch?
Big picture, it's an agricultural conservation easement, and so agricultural uses and all of those uses associated with it. It is private, so it's not public use on the land, but yeah, in general, it's an agricultural conservation easement.
Okay. For some reason, I thought this was going to be an outright purchase. No? I mean, yours have moved.
They have. Okay. Yes, and those are details that would be good to ask Jess Kirby. I don't know all of those details. As the newest member of council, I haven't been working on this for years, as some of my colleagues have.
So some of the property is referred to as recreational, some not. What's the difference?
On the total property or this one that we looked at last night on the North Meadows?
Well, all of it, yeah.
That's another question that would be good to ask our lands manager. I'm not really sure the details on that, sorry.
Okay. Let's see. The council also approved the mayor's recommendations for allocation of the transportation sales tax money. Were you at the COG, the Council of Governments meeting on Monday?
Yes, I was. There's actually all five county councilors are members of the COG. That's the Council of Governments that includes the five of us and all of our local mayors. We have three votes as county councilors, and then each of the mayors. And really the idea with that body is it's a place where all of us can come together and work on some of our more regional issues and planning and be able to move forward in a way that really gives everyone a seat at the table to discuss these issues that impact all of us. And so at our last COG meeting, this was the COG meeting in September. This recommendation was passed on to the county council, and last night we did pass it. I think as Chair Hansen noted, reluctantly, there were some concerns since it was passed in September that have come to our attention. But really, I think that decision was based on not wanting to impact other recipients of the grant. So to give your listeners a little bit more background, this is the transportation sales tax that the county passed several years ago to support big regional transportation projects throughout the county. The COG is the program manager for this tax. And so they are tasked with receiving applicants and prioritizing projects and then awarding these grants.
So as you noted, it seems like the council nearly voted against approving the funding last night. So what was the hesitation? I mean, what caused that pause?
I think the pause was some concern about the the process of which these grants were awarded in COG, and there was a little bit of confusion. And like I said, we learned of some things after that recommendation was passed in September, and in the last meeting, as you mentioned on Monday when the COG met, there was a lot of discussion around that process, and really. We need to come up with a policy that really outlines that process and how these grants are awarded and the COG's role in all of that. And that will be an ongoing discussion. We'll have to continue in January. And so I think that's where we were a little hesitant to approve the awards with that policy not being in place, but really we didn't want to, as I mentioned, postpone funding for the small cities grants and postpone those bigger projects coming forward.
Okay, so it sounds like, again, there's not a process, and I think that's the problem here, or policy, as you put it, but there was certainly some discussion of making this transportation money tax dollars, more like a wrap tax or a restaurant sales tax that distributes money with a committee as opposed to COG?
I think COG would still be the program manager. I think just having that procedure in place, so there's really no question of how these projects are awarded, and each year COG will revisit and prioritize or weight these different areas that really we try to hit, and really going back to the spirit of this transportation sales tax is really to provide support for these big regional impactful projects that really benefit everyone across the county, and so just kind of going back to that, but I think ultimately COG will still be the program manager, just figuring out a procedure to do that.
Okay, High Valley Transit was one of the applicants and received $2 million of the $5 million available for its 224 Bus Rapid Transit project. Do you know how much or to what degree they're relying on this tax to finish the project? It sounds like they had asked for more than that.
Yeah, the request was $5 million, I believe, for this portion of the BRT project. And yes, they certainly are relying on it. The BRT project will be a big, impactful regional transportation project. And so this will just be a piece of it.
Okay. Sounds like you will also be chairing the first COG meeting of 2026. Is that... Do you take turns each meeting, or do you chair for the entire year?
No, actually, according to the agreement, there will be a chair is appointed each year, and that chair is normally would be the vice chair from the previous year. And because Mayor Marsh decided not to run, he is currently the vice chair. We decided that it would be best to have a temporary chair, and then with the three new mayors that would be coming on, that we would appoint a chair at that meeting. So I will just be serving temporarily in that role.
Okay. Let's move on. The Klein-Dolly parcel was discussed. The council received an update on negotiations with the potential developer of this. That is Columbus Pacific Development. You heard from Tony Tyler, who had three questions for the council. The first was, do they target existing residents' income level or the workforce who may be driving up from Parley's? Did you guys make a decision on that?
We didn't make a decision, but I think we did provide some feedback. And I think there was a little confusion maybe of how that question was worded. And so I appreciate how you said it. It really is looking at the wages of our workforce versus the average income of our residents. And as we know, that's, there's a pretty big gap there. In Summit County, the average or area median income for a single person is around $118,000, where our workforce wages, the average or the area median income is about 48% of that, around $56,000. And so there's quite a big gap there. And so the idea is not necessarily that we're building for people that are commuting or people that are already living here, but to match those wages.
All right. And another question was, do you want to see more for sale units or more for rent units?
Yes, that was the second question, and I think Tony got some good feedback on this. I think it makes a lot of sense. In the original response to the RFP, the unit mix was heavier on the rental side, around 60% and 40% for sale. And really looking at adjusting these AMIs to include more of our workforce wages. The idea is providing more for sale and fewer for lease. And also, I think with a lot of the council comments that he received on this, I think a lot of the affordable units we've seen recently are for rent. And so I think most of us agreed that more for sale units would be, just help addressing more of that need. There is need across the spectrum, from our lowest wage earners to over 100% of the area median income. So I think this mix, allows us to address lower area median incomes for rentals, and then really address more for sale units that we're missing, that kind of middle income level in the county.
Yeah, so what did you do? Just kind of flip those percentages or?
Yeah, so the original RFP response was, just over 60% rental, 38% ownership. And then this revised unit mix is the reverse of that. So about 40% rentals, apartments, and 60% ownership.
All right, and then there was a very narrow question, just the 22 of the most expensive deed restriction homes were at 150% of area median income and changed those to market rate. What did you decide on that?
Yeah, we didn't make a decision, but I think we all showed interest in potentially moving some of those higher AMIs to market rate. As you mentioned, that's only 22 of the 172 units. In the original mix of units, 10 were 150% AMI and 12 were at 120% AMI. And I think Tony made a good case that really that 150% AMI is very unlikely to want to buy into a deed restricted unit with that income level. They have a lot more options. And so I think the idea is there was still some interest in addressing that 120% AMI. And so when he comes back, I think we'll look at some other options of if it's possible to save some of those in the mix. And if the 10 units at 150% AMI allow us to provide more affordability at the lower end of the AMI spectrum, I think that's something that we would be willing to visit.
Okay. Tyler also was proposing to create a new zone, a neighborhood mixed use 2 known as an NMU2. Would it be tailor-made for this parcel, or what would this new zone mean for the rest of the county?
That's yet to be determined, and that's what we'll continue talking on as we move on this next month. Really, in December, we'll start looking at that more closely. I think that's the hope, is that we're able to create a new zone that potentially other developers can use, but really it would be specifically for this Klein Dolly development, and a lot of those details are still needing to be worked out.
Okay, the county still needs to adopt an exclusive rights to negotiate agreement with Columbus Pacific, so when's that going to happen?
That is continuing. I think in Tony's timeline, he mentioned in December, we'll continue those discussions. And then I think with the idea of finalizing a development agreement in the spring, in April, that would include those deed restrictions, the financial portion, and again, that right to negotiate should be established by then.
Okay, so that'll require a council vote. Ultimately.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. The county also received an update about progress under the Community Renewable Energy Act, which will source local power from renewable sources of electricity or offset the consumption of local customers. The Public Service Commission, which regulates Utah utilities, will vote on this CREA program. That will happen December 16th at 6 p.m. Should the public attend and participate in this, or does it really matter?
I think absolutely anyone that's interested. Emily Quinton, our sustainability director, presented last night, and on her final slide, there's a QR code and a website link on there for anyone that is interested in following. And I would highly recommend that. This has been a long time coming. As you mentioned, the formerly CREA, which is now the Utah Renewables Committee. It's made up of 19 committees that make up about 25% of all the energy sales in the state. They've been working on this, and I'm really grateful for the councils before me. Summit County played a pretty critical role in the establishment in this Utah Renewables Committee and the passing of HB 411, which is that the Community Clean Energy Act. And so this is really exciting news. I just really appreciate Emily's work on this. She serves as the secretary for the URC. And as you mentioned, they'll be presenting to that Public Service Commission on the 16th. I think all of our council showed interest in showing support in that hearing.
Okay. And finally, just it's your first budget season with the council. So what's jumping out at you during these discussions?
Wow. It's a lot. We were given a 170-page packet just a couple of weeks ago, and so we've been slowly chipping away at it. I really thought maybe we would get a little bit more feedback through the process from the public. That's probably the thing I've been most surprised about, and I imagine these last two council meetings in December, we'll hear a lot more from the public. But it's I'm just so grateful for the team, our budget team, and the work they've done to get us to this point, because it is it's quite the process.
Okay, what's next with this? Because the approval's coming up pretty soon, yeah.
Yeah, we won't be meeting next week because of the Thanksgiving holiday. So the following Wednesday, on the 3rd, we'll have a public hearing. That one will take place in the Richens building in Kimball Junction. And then the following week, we'll have a public hearing at the courthouse in Colville. So if you're following the budget discussions, those two would be, either one of those would be good to attend.
Okay. And Basin Recreation is looking for a Truth in Taxation, a small budget increase here. How do you feel about that? Because I know that you were against the city recreation bond.
Yes, I was. And this, and I should, you know, as I mentioned in that statement a few years ago when that came up, I support bonds. I think at the time there were a lot of critical needs, as there still are in the city and the county, of course, too. I felt like with some of those needs, maybe focusing on recreation, a big bond wasn't the best use of our taxpayer dollars. With Basin Rec now and going through Truth in Taxation, I think I'm looking forward to hearing from the public and weighing in on this. It's probably something we've heard, probably the one we've heard the most about in this budget process. And I think that's good. I think it's important for people to understand where those dollars are coming from. I think Dana's made a really good case for it, and I think their approach of these smaller incremental increases are a much better approach than waiting 10 years and having to do a really big increase. Recreation is important in this community, and I think with the cost of everything going up, as we all are experiencing, and our facilities in need, I think this will be an important one to discuss.
Okay, Megan, I'll leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Megan McKenna, a member of the Summit County Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. In the studio now with an update from the Park City School District, Superintendent of Schools Lindsay Huntsman, along with Vice President of the Park City Board of Education, Nick Kill. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So I wanted to start off, of course, first with the fact that documents were emailed to KPCW along with other media this week showing that district failed to manage the asbestos on site at the former Treasure Mountain Middle School while it is being demolished. Asbestos, again, was commonly used in building materials in the past, of course, has some very concerning health effects. The district looks like it sent out an internal email to staff to give an update on recent concerns and questions regarding the demolition. In that email, it said no risk to the public or workforce occurred. So how do we know that?
We take environmental compliance and community safety very seriously. Throughout the demolition process, a certified environmental specialist has been on site every day, monitoring air quality, ensuring all work complies with state and federal requirements. Treasure Mountain has had an active asbestos management plan since 1989. That includes the required 6-month inspections and the 3-year re-inspections. So asbestos in certain areas of the building was already known and properly managed. During the demolition, out of abundance of caution, additional sampling was done when results identified regulated asbestos-containing material in that area. Work immediately was paused in that section. Licensed abatement professionals completed the regulated removal process, and the Utah Division of Air Quality allowed demolition to continue in the unaffected areas.
So are you telling me that it's not an issue? I mean, it sounds like somebody didn't follow policy here or procedure.
I don't know that that's factual. The district received a compliance advisory, not a citation, which was originally reported in one of the articles. We were already addressing corrective actions before the written notice arrived, and we're not expecting fines or penalties. Demolition started on October 21st, and that was in the area of the weight room. The locker rooms are on the opposite side of that weight room, and that's where the asbestos was identified. And we have video footage indicating that October 21st, we were demoing in the weight room and not in that shower room, locker room area.
And okay. It's important to note that like this stuff comes up because we are constantly testing and retesting. Right? Everything was tested initially, but we're still testing as we go through the constant demolition. And as we do that, we revise the plan for that demolition. When something is uncovered like that, we'll pause in one area and we'll work in areas that we can until things are properly mitigated.
Yeah. Any concern with the district's project management team here? I mean, are these the same folks that got a stop work order when they didn't get the necessary permits for the Jeremy Ranch development so close to the creek?
Yeah, MoCA continues to be a valuable partner in delivering major capital projects. The district is confident in their expertise and will continue to monitor all aspects of project management to ensure the highest standards of safety for our students, staff, and our neighbors. As Nick mentioned, daily air quality monitoring is in place and reported to the DEQ. Results to date remain well within the safe limits. The site features perimeter fencing, K-rail barriers, and water cannon dust suppression. In fact, we had a neighbor call on Friday because the wind had picked up, so we increased the water suppression during that day. And the trucks use designated access routes to keep traffic and dust away from the neighborhoods that surround that area.
All right, so just so we're clear, I mean, I think we all appreciate the district trying to save taxpayer dollars, but are we seeing some kind of cutting corners by the contractor?
Not that we have any evidence of, no.
Okay, so what's the status now? Work has continued and really was never stopped, is that right?
Correct. Based on advisement from the individuals who came out on site and evaluated that area, they gave us permission to continue the demo.
All right, and what's the plan? I mean, will it be finished soon?
We hope. We're hoping to get all the way down to the slab, and depending on weather, we may or may not be able to remove the foundation. Currently, the foundation needs to be tested, so they'll take a portion of that and test it for contaminants prior to taking up the entire foundation.
Are we talking about possible mine soils? Is that what?
Yes, and we need to abide by the covenant.
Okay. So it may just stay put. Does that affect then the ongoing construction that we've got happening there with the sports complex?
It does not. If you've seen our social media, you've seen drone footage that the turf has been laid down for the softball field, It's difficult to see that from Kearns Boulevard. We anticipate the turf being laid for the baseball field next week, and then we'll continue to progress on that project.
And it was always planned to, we would probably leave that slab down from the building through this winter. I personally would much rather see snow right now, but if this weather holds, it does give us an opportunity to potentially get rid of that slab as well.
Yeah, and that's what you did here on Tuesday. Yeah. The project manager saying the warm weather means construction could continue. So would that, it would be the slab, or what else would we see continue on?
You'll continue to see the baseball and softball fields reach full completion, and then once weather starts, you likely are going to see a bit of the activity slow down.
So would the softball and baseball fields be ready for spring play?
That is our anticipation.
All right. Also wanted to note that the school board consent agenda Tuesday included emergency environmental consultant expenses. How much and what was this for?
This was to keep the environmentalist on site daily, and then DEQ comes out a couple times a week on a staggered schedule. So again, ensuring safety and that we are fully compliant with state and federal regulations.
All right, and what's that costing?
I do not have that dollar figure off the top of my head, but I'm happy to get that to you later today.
Okay, and again, this would be in addition to what was already budgeted for? We didn't have that in the budget to have somebody on site daily?
It's part of the budget. We switched contractors.
And there's always a contingency in the budget if something unexpected does come up. So no, it's not raising the expected cost from that
All
perspective.
Right. And why the change in contractors?
We decided to go a different direction.
Because you're not happy with what was being done, or?
The contract had expired, so then we went through emergency procurement according to our own policy.
And what does that mean?
It means you're going out to secure another contractor according to our policy and following the procedure outlined.
All right, and why would a contract end in the middle of a job? That seems weird.
Sometimes you have identified needs in the middle of the job where you need to extend a contract or look for a different contractor based on the work that needs to happen.
Okay, so who was the former contractor and who do you have now?
The former contractor was R&R, and now we have RMEC Inc.
All right, let's see, the board also heard about a proposal to adopt curriculum for students with autism or significant developmental delays. Why the need for a new curriculum?
We haven't had one previously, and we have seen an increase in students with autism, and we know that our students learn in different ways. And this particular program has a step-by-step lesson for our teachers, hands-on activities, tools to help students communicate, and ways to check progress. We're also aware that it's being used in other school districts across the state of Utah, so there's some validity to this particular curriculum.
And how is it different from other special ed curriculum?
This particular one is specific to autism and our students who have that specific disability. It's really geared towards some of our youngest learners in our elementary school.
Can you talk a little bit about what that curriculum consists of?
Yeah, it's called STAR, and our special ed department's actually gonna host a Zoom meeting on December 3rd at 5. For families to learn more about the new curriculum. They'll get a walkthrough of the program, see how it works in classrooms, ask questions, and also meet the teachers who will be using it.
So it will be implemented this school year?
Correct. We need to have public comment period, which we're doing now with the Zoom meeting, and then it'll come back before the board one more time for final approval.
Okay, how many students are we talking about here that would kind of fall under this curriculum?
Yeah, we've got a handful. Since COVID, we know the needs of our students are different, and we're trying to meet them where they're at.
Okay, I mean, are we talking a dozen, 50?
I would say anywhere from 10 to 30 in that early learner range.
All right, and teachers are trained and ready to implement this then, or?
They will be once it's adopted.
Okay. So maybe the start of next semester, is that the idea?
Yeah, calendar year 2026.
Oh, okay. Not until next school year then?
No, January 2026.
Thank you. All right, let's see. The district also opted to open early enrollment for all seven schools. Why?
We've seen a decline in enrollment for the last 5+ years. The state of Utah for the last 3 years has seen a steady decline in enrollment. And we know that we can generate revenue if students choose to come to Park City School District. We have these amazing facilities, and we want to provide that unique learning experience to others outside of the Park City School District boundary.
Yeah, and we certainly don't want to affect class sizes, but, you know, filling the classes that we have enables us to, as Lindsay said, keep more of the money from our tax revenue in this community, in our schools. And it also enables us to run programs that we would have to reconsider if we lose significant numbers of our student population. So it's really enabling us to generate revenue and to offer a good range of programs for our students.
Yeah, and we saw this trend coming. I mean, we saw, again, 5 years ago, we've been reporting on this, and yet the district just pushed through with all of the bonding, all of the new construction. And we kept asking, why are we building this? So why did we build it if we can't fill the classrooms?
The classrooms are full, so I don't want the community to think that classrooms aren't full. We are using every single learning station. The challenge is we do have some class sizes that are 15, 20 in our younger grades, and we'd like to adhere to our 23 at elementary and 25 at secondary. So really maximizing the space and utilizing it efficiently.
Yeah, any concern financially though, if in fact we don't fill these classes up, that it does impact the revenue that we need to pay off the bonds?
No, I'm fully confident in our business administrator, Randy Upton, and where we are from a financial perspective.
All right. And we'll obviously share more as we go through the budgeting process, into next year. Yeah, and the other thing I would say is I think it's important to note that the school districts are actually open by default in Utah. It's an exception to close them, and we had reason to keep ours closed to protect class sizes for a while. We really don't have that reason anymore.
Mm-hmm. Where do you expect to get these students from? I mean, do you think they are here already and then just they've gone somewhere else?
We would love to get some of those from this community back, but we certainly have numbers that are in this community and are currently choosing to go to other places, and we saw that when we opened the schools in the primary grades, the elementary grades. But also, you know, we have surrounding communities. If you look out at Silver Creek, you look at places out towards the retreat and Black Rock Ridge, places like that. We know there are kids close by who would love to come into these schools.
Yeah, I'm certainly interested in recapturing those families who have chosen private school down in the valley. What is it that drove them that way, and what can we do to bring them back to Park City School District? We know that families who applied for K-5, many of them asked, when are you going to open secondary schools? So we believe that there are families waiting in the wings who want to enroll at Ecker and Park City High School.
All right, they could be putting that money towards the college education. All right, again, if it's open, so anybody anywhere can make that application now?
Yeah, we're in that early enrollment period, and then we will finalize that in March. We want to see how many families actually apply based on the seats, because we know families will move into the boundary as well, so we have to ensure we allow space for them.
Okay. And the calendar, the board also approved the upcoming school year calendar. Can you tell us about some of the highlights, what people should know? Because there was a lot of discussion about this. It's
there
like, oh, we're
is.
Cutting winter break, and it's always been.
Status quo, students will return on a Wednesday, not a Monday, so that is a shift from this last school year. Fall break returns to its normal 15th, 16th. It was a bit earlier this school year. In September, you'll notice that we have two Monday holidays, Labor Day and then Yom Kippur. Thanksgiving break, winter break are the same. One noted change with winter break, our teachers will return on January 4th for professional development, which is the Monday, but our families will still be on break for one more day. Spring break is still the same. February break, still the same. We built in two snow days if we don't need them. Obviously, our students will be off, but our teachers will come to work. It will extend the Memorial Day weekend. It'll be a four-day weekend if we don't need that snow day. But all in all, it's a couple minor tweaks to embed some professional development days for teachers, but also maintaining the values of our community. We heard loud and clear, don't take away February break and maintain the Friday early out, which we are doing.
Okay. Anything else?
No, we're excited to continue moving in a positive direction. We were able to celebrate Veterans Day at all the different sites last week. We had a literacy night last week introducing and sharing the new curriculum with families, and we'll continue to host events like that for our community so they can understand what we're doing within the classroom and learn how to better support their kids at home.
Okay, Lindsay Huntsman, Nick Hill, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In the studio now with an update from the Park City Summit County Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so first up, you've got the annual Create PC Holiday Makers Market launch party. Tell us about this. Always
yes,
a fun night.
Yes, we do. Yeah, no, it's a wonderful night. We look forward to it every year. So Create PC is a local artist collective. This is a program that the Arts Council operates 12 months out of the year out of 1500 Kearns Boulevard. And we do exhibitions throughout the year, but this is one of our favorites of the year. It's a holiday makers market. We are representing over 80 local makers. And so we really expand the types of creative products that are in the gallery for the makers market. So it's beyond, you know, fine art, paintings, photography. For the makers market, we have chocolates and cookies and apparel and homemade chapstick and ornaments. And so we really aim to create a one-stop shop for locals and visitors to go and to exclusively shop local. So it's opening this Friday, November 21st, and we have a launch party from 6 to 9 p.m. We do this every year. It's always kind of, it's a lot. We have great support from our community, and everyone comes. It's so fun. We have, you can meet all the makers. There's a DJ. We have some great catering, and we have a bar, thanks to Kettle One. And so, yeah, it's a really fun night. And so that launches Friday night. We welcome everyone, all ages as well. So come, bring your friends and family. And I think the key about coming Friday night is know that it is first dibs on shopping. So we have really unique pieces. So incredible pottery, prints and cards. And sometimes those really amazing items go that first night. So we recommend you come and really kick off the holiday season with the Arts Council at Create PC. Again, it's at 1500 Kearns Boulevard Friday night. But then it will be open for the entire holiday season, actually through January. So it will operate as, you know, kind of a brick and mortar creative marketplace for people to go and shop local. And that is, you know, outside of the opening party. It's open Wednesdays through Sundays, so closed Monday, Tuesdays from 12 to 6.
Okay. You also have out a few calls for artists. Tell me about these.
We do. So, yeah, we partner with both Summit County and Park City to help manage their public art boards. So the one that's due soon, coming up really quickly, due December 3rd, the Summit County Public Art Advisory Board has released an RFP, or a request for proposals for artwork on the rail trail out in Colville. The theme of the artwork is Quilted Together, and this is actually going to be a theme that weaves throughout the entire rail trail as public art is implemented throughout the rail trail, especially on the eastern part of that corridor through Wanchep. But the Summit County Public Art Board is starting in Colville, right off of Main Street there. The artist stipend for concepts is $13,000. So if you head to summitcounty.org, you can search this RFP and look at all the details. But the, you know, Summit County has done a lot of really interesting work on a redevelopment plan for the rail trail corridor, and this, the arts implementation plan and making sure there's public art to help with wayfinding is part of that, and this is really a pilot project for the Summit County Public Art Board.
Okay, and then you have another call out. What's that
for? So the Park City Public Art Advisory Board is working with Transit. They've released a request for proposals for artists to create artful bike racks. These are going to be, you probably have seen them around town. There's kind of these pretty standard inverted U-shaped bike racks. And so we're asking for digital designs that will create a little bit more artful designs that will that will essentially be framed within that U. And we're looking for 7 different designs to identify the 7 Park City neighborhoods. And so artists, especially digital artists, we are asking for digital designs in the proposal. It's $800 per digital design for the neighborhood. And but we are looking for, you know, I think it's probably going to end up being maybe more of a professional graphic designer, because you do need to make sure that you can create something that we can send to the fabricator and laser cut. But I think it's a really cool opportunity for really utilizing art as an identifier for a neighborhood, and to really just, you know, take a boring bike rack and create something beautiful out of it.
Okay. And the deadline for that one is?
That one is January 30th, so you have a little bit more time. Head to parkcity.org and look at their RFP site for more info if you're interested.
All right. Let's talk about some of the upcoming events you wanted to highlight.
Yeah. This segment as kind of a weekend arts update. The Egyptian Theater is kicking off the weekend with a really fun, festive show, Mark O'Connor's An Appalachian Christmas. And so that's showing November 20th through the 22nd at the Egyptian Theater, Thursday through Saturday at 8 p.m. And this is featuring Grammy Award-winning Maggie O'Connor. So head to, I think it's parkcityshows.com for tickets for that. And a really cool partnership that's happening this weekend with Park City Film and Kimball Art Center. They are showing a screening of Paint Me a Road Out of Here. It's showing November 21st through 23rd, but they are hosting on Saturday night a post-film discussion with one of the featured actors in the documentary, Mary Enoch Elizabeth Baxter. This is a really fascinating documentary. They're following this massive ordeal about a painting by Faith Ringgold in 1971. There was a painting created for the Women's House. It was created for the incarcerated people on Rikers Island. And then there was a lot of mishandling, storage, and, you know, I think the painting just wasn't really shown after that. And so artist and rapper Mary Enoch Elizabeth Baxter, herself a formerly incarcerated, she was commissioned to create a new work for Rikers Island women. And they banded together with Ringgold, politicians, philanthropists, corrections officers, to liberate the original painting from Rikers Island, and more profoundly, Black women from mass incarceration. So I think this sparks really interesting conversation. Again, it sounds like the night to go is Saturday, November 22nd, so that you can meet Mary Enoch Elizabeth Baxter and see that post-film discussion. Again, this is Saturday, November 22nd. And if you're interested in taking this further, it's actually presented in parallel with the Kimball Art Center and their exhibit, Gaze Into Those Eyes, which is open through January 4th. So really interesting discussion and film. And since I'm not on next week, I've been getting some questions. I wanted to let the community know that the Park City Gallery Stroll, the last Friday Gallery Stroll, will happen this month. It's going to be on the Friday right after Thanksgiving. And so if you have family in town, it's a great opportunity to head to Main Street and check out all of those galleries on Main Street and beyond. So that's Friday, November 28th from 6 to 9 p.m.
Okay. That it?
That's all.
Okay, Jocelyn, thank you. Jocelyn Scudder is the Executive Director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.